The Pewter Nation podcast is presented by Westshore Financial, the official financial sponsors of PewterReport.com. For life insurance, investment, and retirement strategies, Westshore Financial's Chris Garrido can help you plan for the future and protect your family's finances. Call Chris at 813-434-0037 for a free, no-obligation conversation today. And now, get ready for the new Pewter Nation podcast.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I'm Mark Cook, along with my boss, Taylor Jenkins.
Hello, hello, hello.
And my other boss, Matthew Matera.
Heyo.
And the big boss, John Ledyard. How are you, John?
I thought I was going to be like the subordinate or something like that. I was not expecting big boss, but I'm doing well, sir.
Well, all you guys are over Scott because he's suspended for this podcast.
It's true. It's a good point.
Fortunately, he tested positive for a banned substance at Pewter Report, whiskey. And so he's no longer on the podcast, at least for 1 week. And he's probably going to be suspended for some future weeks as well. So anyway, we're going to talk to his agent soon, and there's going to be a meeting with the Players Association. And we'll see if he can appeal that suspension and maybe join us again next week. But
that's why it's really important to vet these character concerns, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's a shame that it's taken us 25 years to figure out that, you know, he's not good.
Right. But sometimes, anyway, you know, people hide it well.
I don't know how he got past the testing at the combine when he was in Indy.
Yeah, well, you know what? Remember, he didn't – yeah, he
– diluted sample.
Right. I was gonna say, sample. Yeah, diluted sample for sure. All right. So that's not true. Well, it's kind of true. Scott's not here. So anytime someone's not here, we assume they're suspended. There's been no official word other than he said he's not going to be here. Actually, he's taking a little bit of time off this weekend. He's going to take a little bit more time off. I'm going to take some time off in June. We're all going to try and get some vacation time in before the start of what we hope, fellas, is a football season. And before we get into that, we need to talk about our good friend Chris Garrido over at Westshore Financial. The Pewter Nation podcast, of course, as you know, is presented by Chris Garrido at Westshore Financial, the official financial sponsor of PewReport.com. Listen, whether it's life insurance, whether it's investments, whether it's retirement strategies, Chris Garrido is the guy that you definitely want to turn to at Westshore Financial. After just one conversation with Chris, myself, Scott, some other people I know that have met with Chris realized they just didn't have the right plan together for their financial future. I didn't have enough life insurance to protect my family today. Certainly didn't have enough retirement income for my future. But it's never too late to start planning for retirement. It doesn't matter. Start now, young guys. Matthew, Taylor, start now. Don't wait till you're old like myself. John, young guy, start now. Make the call today. Don't wait. We've known Chris for over a decade. And Scott's been a client even before he sponsored the Pewter Nation podcast. I trust Chris Garrido with my retirement. Call him today. I'm sure you'll form the same opinion. Give Chris a call, 813-434-0037 for a complimentary, no obligation preliminary conversation. Again, 813-434-0037. Give Chris a call. You'll want him in your corner. And I think you'll be very pleased. And listen, guys, right now with all of the ups and downs, a lot of downs right now, I don't know anything about the stock market. Is this a time that I should buy? Should I wait a little bit longer? What should I do? Chris Garrido is a guy who's seen the ebbs and flows of the stock market, of investment strategies. He'll be able to tell you the safest place and the most effective place to put your money. The best part is you can go have a meeting with him. I met with him for 2 hours. My first meeting with him, and didn't charge me a penny, learned a whole lot. So definitely give Chris a shout, 813-434-0037. All right, so we are going to talk about a number of subjects. Number one, Scott had a really good Fab Five today. You know, Scott, sometimes his Fabs tend to be five things of the same thing. I thought today's was really kind of interesting because he hit on a number of topics. Number one, he talked about, you know, Grady and Bronk. That's their new name, by the way. Brady and Gronk's, you know, effect they'll have in the Buccaneers offense this year. And he talked to Mike Reese, who is the ESPN beat writer for the Patriots, kind of what Jenna Lane does. That's what Mike Reese does. And so he's covered this team for a long time, knows the ins and the outs. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, you definitely should. He also talked about some of the mocks that are already out. John, you had one come out already. Mm-hmm. Way too early mocks, but it's interesting to always see. He talked about that a little bit. He also talked about, you know, some of his surprise guys from rookie minicamp. And right now we're not getting a rookie minicamp. We should be out there probably this weekend or last weekend should have been the rookie minicamp and OTAs and all those things. We can't tell you what Tristan Wirfs looks like. We can't tell you what and Antoine Winfield Jr. looks like because we can't see him in person, which is unfortunate. And really the Buccaneers can't really tell right now how those guys look other than what they saw on tape and what they saw at the combine. But let's go back to Scott's Fab Five and his talking and interview with Mike Reese. The thing that I took out of it is Reese is still very, very high on Tom Brady. I mean, there's some people that say at, you know, 43, which he's going to be, I think, in August, that, you know, maybe he's lost a little bit. But John Spytek, who he's got some quotes from, who is in the Buccaneers front office, and also Mike Reese, they all, you know, still think this guy's got everything he's had, minus the age part of things, but he just didn't have many weapons last year up in New England. What do you guys think?
I thought the piece was extremely interesting, the interview and the thoughts from Reese, not only because it kind of everybody's wondering how this fit's going to happen, especially with Bruce Arians. And Scott did a good job of kind of painting a picture of where Gronkowski wins and where players in Bruce Arians' offense typically wins, and those really aligned. And everybody knows that Bruce Arians runs a vertical offense, and that they want to get guys vertically down the field. And I think that one of the biggest reasons that this team kept O.J. Howard was because he thrives in that role. Rob Gronkowski has thrived in that role. That's been what they've done. Even though Howard may not be the volume target that Rob Gronkowski is, he's been really, really effective in big plays in the passing game, even in seasons where he's been labeled a disappointment. I posted this on Twitter earlier this week, and I think it blew a lot of people's minds. I asked first, you know, over the past three seasons among tight ends with 100 targets or more, guess who the first and second ranked tight ends are in yards per target? And I said, no cheating. I got hundreds of responses, and I think only one or two people maybe guessed the correct two tight ends. And I think they admitted to me it was only because I covered the box. But over the past three seasons among tight ends with 100 total targets or more, O.J. Howard is first overall in the NFL in yards per target. That means if you throw the ball to O.J. Howard, you are probably getting a good play, not a big play. Not just like, oh, once in a while he made a big play, but per times he was targeted, he was over 10 yards per target, well over, almost at 11 yards per target. Number one in the NFL in tight ends over the past three seasons with 100 targets or more. And Rob Gronkowski was second, even though he missed a season. He has still had more targets in the 2 years that he did play in that time span than O.J. Howard did. And so he was ranked second overall in yards per target. So you were talking about the two most vertically talented tight ends in the passing game in the NFL are now in a vertical passing game offense, one of them with the quarterback that he became a Hall of Fame type talent with over the years. I just have a hard time seeing how the combination of all that doesn't add up to a lot of success in the passing game.
You know, one thing that Mike Reese talked about was the relationship that Brady and Gronkowski have. You know, they don't it's going to take Brady some time to probably get on the same page with Mike Evans and a Chris Godwin. Now, I think this was a huge move by the Buccaneers with bringing in a familiar guy that, you know, right out of the gate. I mean, if you're a fantasy football guy, and I'm not, but if you are, you want Rob Gronkowski starting those first couple weeks for you, right? Because he's probably going to be one of, if not the most targeted guys in the first couple weeks, at least, you know, have a lot of success in those first couple weeks. Number one, he'll be healthy. And who knows how long he'll stay healthy. Can he stay healthy? That was a question also that Mike Reese posed to Scott. you know, he feels more comfortable with Brady being able to play for two or three years as opposed to Rob. But I'm telling you, the more you think about it, this isn't a move just to sell tickets. This is Tom Brady going to those guys saying, this is my guy. I need this guy. I want this guy. I like O.J. Howard on film, but I've never thrown to him. I like Cam Brate on film, but I've never thrown a pass to him as well. I can throw to this guy in his sleep. I mean, it's just a familiarity and a comfort level that Tom Brady is going to have. And with the current situation, with no OTAs, who knows what training camp's going to look like, I think it's a smart move by the Buccaneers.
And I think going on the point a little bit, I think that chemistry is such an important thing for a quarterback. One of the things that I think Mike Reese said that really kind of went along with what I've been saying for the last couple of years looking at Brady is just don't bet against him. Now, at some point, Brady may have this drop-off. I thought it may have come, you know, 2 years ago. But at the same time, he's still playing great. He prepares unlike anybody we've ever seen. And even at, what, 42, turning 43 this season, he's in unbelievable shape, and he can still throw the ball. Now, Cam Brate is not the most talented tight end, but he's been one of the most dangerous weapons over the past 4 years with Jameis in the red zone strictly because of that chemistry. And it was like Mike Reese said in Scott's article, there was a time when the Patriots didn't play Gronkowski for an entire preseason. And then he came in week one and I think caught three touchdown passes from Brady because it's just that natural between them. They've had so much success. And I think that that chemistry is uber important, especially for someone at the quarterback position. And Gronkowski is entering Tampa Bay the healthiest he's been in a long time. He's spent a decade in the league. He's been beaten up. He's been battered, multiple surgeries. And I can guarantee that he took the year off. He started to enjoy all the things that come with retirement, the time off, the getting to go on TV shows and New Year's shows and everything like that. But about 8 months into that retirement, he was feeling healthy. He was feeling good. And when Tom went down to Tampa, I think that just had to be the most attractive thing for him. And I think it's a huge addition for Tampa, both of them.
Yeah, I think adding Gronk almost kind of expedites the process, kind of what you're talking about, Mark, without having any OTAs and who knows when training camp is coming on. We've all talked about how much great chemistry that they have together. I mean, Gronk kind of talked about it too when he spoke with the media on Zoom that even when he was retired, he was catching some passes from Brady. Now, it wasn't every week. I think it was a couple times over the summer out in Los Angeles, but it just shows that they were still a little spark there. And now we see it with him coming back to football to play for the Bucs. And that was something that Reese said that surprised me a little bit when he said that he doesn't think there's going to be a problem at all with Gronk coming back. I don't think it's going to be an issue, obviously, with chemistry because he's coming back and playing with Brady. But I do think it'll be a little interesting in the sense of it'd be one thing if he was coming back to New England. He's with all of his coaches, with the same scheme, the same program and everything. But he's coming to a new team where he's going to be asked to do some different things. So in the grand scheme of things, I'm sure Gronk will be fine. But I'm interested to see if there will be a little bit of growing pains when you add in the new team, the new system, and the fact that he hasn't played in a year.
Yeah, I'm excited about the fit with both of these, with Gronkowski and with Brady, but I'll just add this before we move to the next thing is that I just think O.J. Howard, you know, watching more Bucs tape since the draft ended, I really think there's so much potential here, and I don't think he was this horrible player in the passing game. I know blocking, there are things that definitely need to improve and change going into next season, and I hope the addition of Gronkowski helps with that process for him. You know, he was once a good blocker at Alabama. I think there's some confidence boost may be needed there. But late in the season, he got some more targets. I mean, this guy still, over the past, you know, three seasons that he's been in the NFL, 28 passing plays of 20 yards or more. I just think he's never going to be a volume guy. And in this offense, that's totally fine to me. I don't think that's a big deal at all. But he created splash plays, and I don't think there would be quite this negative stigma around him, you know, if they had been more successful as a team this past season, because late down the stretch in last season, they were starting to get him the ball more. He was starting to have more productive games. And I just think if he gets – the more he gets looks, I think the more he's going to make happen. Obviously, he's not going to get probably 10 targets a game in an offense with this many weapons, but he's already shown the ability to maximize every target he gets. And I just think he's really going to be slept on going into the season. I think it's going to be a really good thing for him because it's going to take a lot of that pressure off, and he's going to feel a lot more free to be the player that he really is meant to be and is so talented to be based on his size and athleticism and all those traits that he has.
If OJ comes into this season and has the playbook down, and that was probably his biggest issue from what we understand a little bit last year, is just grasping what he was being asked to do in Bruce Arians' offense versus Dirk Cutter's offense. There's a little bit more complexity to it, the routes and things like that. But if he comes in and plays as well as his potential, when you team him up with the fact that there's O.J. Howard on this team and Cam Brate, think about how much better. And this is, I mean, how much better can Mike Evans be? How much better can Chris Godwin be? How much more effective? I shouldn't say better, because talent-wise, I think, you know, we know how good they are. But I'm talking about even more effectiveness, because the tight ends weren't utilized last year a whole lot to make the receivers better, if you understand what I mean, from a schematic standpoint, because teams early on realized that the tight ends weren't a genuine threat. And if they become a genuine threat, then if you're a defender, if you're a defensive coordinator, you've got to decide, who are we going to cover? Because now you've got potentially four guys that can burn you on the team, not just two. Last year it was really two, because, again, I don't think teams were paying a whole lot of attention to O.J. Howard last year. Cam Brate averaged less than 10 yards a reception last year. In the red zone, he was effective because, you know, he's always been a good guy and had that chemistry, like Matt said, or Taylor said, with Jameis. But, you know, man, I mean, just think about the possibilities. If those guys, if Gronkowski stays healthy and O.J. Howard plays to his potential, I think that benefits Mike Evans and Chris Godwin as well.
Do you think this is – sorry. Do you think this is the land – I know the Bucs picked up O.J.'s fifth-year option for next season, but do you think this is the last year in terms for O.J. where we all keep saying – and this is kind of similar to what we had with Jameis, and I don't want to bring up Jameis too much because, I mean, he's not on the team anymore. But Jameis Winston, the Saints backup quarterback. We've been talking about with OJ for the past two seasons now that, oh man, if he just lives up to his potential, he's got all this talent. If he could just like put it all together, is this the final year where we can't just keep saying, oh, he's got this potential?
Yes.
The pendulum's going to swing in the other direction where it's like, well, at some point we got to stop saying, oh, he has the talent, it's just not there yet. At some point he's got to put it all together, you know?
We have seen good seasons from O.J. Howard that unfortunately ended in injury. That was, you know, that was the biggest problem. I don't think it was necessarily the lack of production and him not reaching that potential. We saw 2 years under Dirk Cutter, I think O.J.'s first and second year, where he played great. He just missed, what, 8 or 9 games to end those two seasons. And I think that's one of the biggest things is like trying to match up. He finally has a healthy season last year, and it's arguably his most disappointing, despite all the talent in the world. Whereas when he was at his most productive, he had, what, an ankle injury, a leg injury, things that ended his first two seasons early, and that's hurt him as well. It's just been a perfect storm of not being able to get everything going for him at the same time. And what better way to do that situation than with a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame tight end entering your room?
Well, and here's the thing, too, though. I think we forget about – you know, the tight end position. If they were 1,400-yard guys, they would be tight ends. They would be wide receivers. So O.J. Howard doesn't have to be a 1,000-yard tight end like Rob Gronkowski was, not the last year that he played, but the year before that. Tight ends that are 1,000-yard receivers are on teams that don't have very good wide receivers. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, look at who's the Eagles tight end? Ertz? Ertz. Is that the guy? I mean, you know, even in Kansas City, I mean, they don't have the star wideout power that the Buccaneers do.
They got Tyreek, and that's it.
I mean, the best that OJ is going to be is the third option on this football team. At the very best, he's the third option. And that's a good thing, though. I mean, that's okay. Again, if he was the first option, he would be a wide receiver, or he would be on a football team that doesn't have very good wide receiver. Yeah. So, you know, I think we all get caught up on, you know, we want OJ to be this Pro Bowl guy. What is a Pro Bowl tight end these days? Usually it's guys on football teams that don't have great wide receivers. I don't know that he's ever going to be a Pro Bowl tight end with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans on the field, but that's okay. He doesn't have to be. But again, you add Gronkowski in the mix, and you've got Cam Brate. There's some potential here for them to to just make the offense as a whole better.
Yeah.
The thing that I think OJ has to be is just more dependable, right?
Right.
He's got to be more dependable. He can't have those games where the ball slips through his hand and he tries to catch it behind his back and it turns into a turnover on the other team's side of the 50. I mean, he's just got to be more dependable. And I think he'll be better this year, number one. It'll be another year in this offense. And I think OJ has a lot to prove. I mean, I follow OJ on social media. I mean, he's a guy that works hard in the offseason. There's no question about it. I thought he was going to have a great year last year because, I mean, he spent his entire offseason. Wasn't a whole lot of – there was some vacationing, which he deserves. But I'm saying he spent a lot of time in the gym working out privately, you know, with guys back in Alabama. So, anyway, all right. I guess that's enough tied in.
I had one more O.J. Howard thought, sure, just to respond to what Matt was saying. And, Matt, I do hear you on that and saying, like, you're right. At some point, he's got to be the guy that he was supposed to be, and they've got to know that. And that point is this season. I would add, though, that I really think he has proven that he can be that guy. I agree that this past season things did not start well for him, especially the beginning of the season, but – down the stretch in the season, he was doing really good things. But even if you harken back to 2018, you know, 2017, almost all tight ends in the NFL start slow. If you watch him in Alabama, you knew he was going to be somewhat of a slow starter. Still came out and caught 6 touchdowns on just 26 catches, you know, averaged almost 17 yards a catch for a tight end. I mean, leads all tight ends since he's entered the league in yards per reception. Already talked about in terms of yards per target. I mean, the guy has just been dynamic when he's actually been targeted and actually been throwing the football. He is not the cleanest route runner in the world, but he was on his way to an unbelievable season in 2018, 565 yards on 34 catches. He missed 6 games that season. I mean, if you extend those numbers out, he is getting up near, you know, the top tight ends in the league in terms of production had he played a 16-game season. Then the offensive switch happens. He is used more as a blocker, I felt like, early in the season. There wasn't as much focus on him in the passing game. Late in the season, I think they started to figure that out some, and I even go back to what they said as a team. I think it was it Jason Light maybe at the Combine. It was Jason Light or Bruce Arians, or maybe both of them, said it at the Combine, talking about how they've watched the tape from last season, and they're very excited about what O.J. Howard can bring to the table. But, I mean, over the last couple of weeks of the season, for the last 5 games he played, you know, he caught at least 3 passes. He has 61 yards receiving, 73 yards receiving, and then back-to-back 46-yard receiving games. Again, in an offense where he's not getting a ton of looks. It's not like this is the number one or number two option in the Bucs offense. And I know they had some injuries late in the season that helped him get the ball a little bit more. But I think that there's already that we've seen enough. It's not like this guy has done nothing for 3 years. He's had, you know, maybe compared to expectations, they haven't been, especially last season, but I still think he's been a pretty solid player. And in 2018, he looked like he was on the cusp of being one of the better tight ends in the league. It hasn't happened linearly for him, but I just really feel like this could be the season and he's in the perfect situation to really break out this year.
Yeah, it was more of a question I just brought up. I don't necessarily feel that way about the subject.
Yeah.
And I still, when you talk about the 2018 season, I still think about that that long touchdown he had. It was more of a catch and run. I believe it was against the Eagles, and he ran like, seemed like 45 yards downfield for the score. And you see that, and you're just like, ah, I want to see more of that from O.J. Howard this season.
Right. Dirk Koetter was better at creating plays and mismatches for O.J. Howard than Bruce Arians was. And I say that because there were games where O.J. was barely even targeted. But then there were other games where, you know, he had terrific games. He had one long, I don't remember what, maybe it was that Eagles game you're thinking of, Matt, that he had the long touchdown reception. There was a couple other games where, I mean, he was wide open. And that was Dirk Koetter's offense, you know, finding something the week before, seeing where there was a weakness and exploiting that. And I think Dirk Koetter did a better job than Bruce Arians did with that. But, again, that's never been Bruce's forte to utilize the tight ends in that matchup. You got to remember Dirk Koetter had spent some time with Tony Gonzalez in Atlanta. So he knew, you know, how to utilize tight ends a little bit more, or trusted tight ends a little bit more. But, again, O.J. Howard has everything you want in a tight end. I mean, size, speed, athleticism, all of those things. Just a matter of putting it all together. Fifth-year money, though. What's the money in the fifth year as opposed to what he's making this year? I mean, it goes up considerably for that final year. So, I mean, that's going to come down to it. If, you know, O.J. Howard has a mediocre to another frustrating year like he had last year to a degree, particularly in the beginning of the year, then yeah, he's gone probably. But if not, then, you know, a lot of that depends on Rob Gronkowski too. I mean, is he a one and done guy? Is he going to stay healthy? Does he want to play more than one more year? You know, we'll see.
Because he's only 31. I mean, Gronk could be feeling good.
31 yesterday.
Right.
Yeah, I wished him happy birthday. I tackled him on the field. That was Tom Brady that did that. All right. DeMar Dotson, his days are done with the Buccaneers. I mean, it's 99% done. Talking to DeMar, he told me he's done. But
Done or done with the Bucs?
Done with the Bucs, yeah. He wants to play again. And that's why he's done with the Buccaneers, is because he wants to be a starter. He doesn't want to be a backup. I didn't get any official word. I didn't ask him specifically what the Buccaneers offered or talked to him about. I don't know if there was ever an official offer, but they made it clear to him that, you know, they're moved in a different direction. And when you use the your first-round pick on an offensive tackle, that pretty much tells you. And when you go sign another guy from another team that plays the same position, that tells you, too, the writing is on the wall that DeMar is, you know, not really in their plans as far as starting. And DeMar told me, he goes, I don't mind being a backup, but I don't want to go through the offseason, the workouts, get into training camp, go through a preseason knowing that I'm just going to be a backup. I want an opportunity to compete. And if I compete, ended up being a backup, that's one thing. But I don't want to go into the season knowing that I'm going to be a backup. Now, me, personally, if I'm DeMar Dotson, hell yeah, if the Buccaneers offered me $2 million to sit on the bench, I would take that in a second instead of $5 million to maybe start somewhere. I know that's a big difference in money. But, I mean, he's taken the beatings. He's had the concussions. He's had the knee injuries, the hamstrings, and those kind of things. You know, I want to get out of this game alive if I'm a football player, right, without long-term damage. And, you know, I think it'd be a great gig. I think it'd be, you know, he'd be a great guy to mentor a guy like Tristan Wirfs. But it doesn't appear to be in the plans, and which is a shame because DeMar is really one of the genuinely good guys on this team. Most of them are, but he's an exceptional good guy.
Mm-hmm. Friend of the program.
Do what?
Friend of the program. He's been on the podcast before.
Yep, definitely. And anytime we needed him for anything, for our charity event.
What's cooking for our events? He was awesome.
I mean, he's always been there for us, and just a really, really good guy. If you haven't read the story, go check it out. There's a lot of things that people have mentioned on Twitter. They didn't really know his background and his story. I mean, here's a guy that shows up in 2009 on a tryout, shows up without a pair of cleats. He goes to the trainer, and he says he wears size 18. The Buccaneers' biggest shoe they had was a size 16. So he squeezes his feet in. He goes through one practice. The next, because it was two practices per day for the 3-day tryout. And by the second practice, he cuts the holes out of the shoes because to get his feet through them. And then his feet ended up getting bloodied. So the next 2 days, he ends up just playing in his Nikes and ends up making the team. Now that's 2009. He doesn't become a full-time starter until 2012. But since then, you know, he's been a warrior and a rock on this football team. I know a lot of people, not a lot of people, there are a few people beating him up a little bit, saying, oh, he should have been gone a long time ago. But, just remember, guys, if you've forgotten about the history of the right tackle position with the Buccaneers, you're talking the Kenyatta Walkers of the world, and this team has spent a lot of bodies and money trying to find Jeremy Trueblood. DeMar was a guy that was not going to be a Pro Bowl guy, but he was a guy that you could trust was going to be a solid guy at that position. And we don't really get into a whole lot about that. If people want to go read that story, they can. And DeMar's a good dude. He's not on social media at all. Try to tag him in all these things. He doesn't have any of that stuff. He's a simple country boy from Alexandria, Louisiana, right? He's not into the look at me and the pats on the back. The one thing I will say to sum this part up is the thing that's I don't even want to use the word sad, but disheartening, I guess, is, you know, boy, he's not going to get a chance to block for Tom Brady. I mean, here's a team that he's never been to the playoffs in his entire career, and that's all he's wanted to do was go to the playoffs. And we saw that in 2002 when Dave Moore had been with the Buccaneers for a while, ends up leaving as a free agent. I think he went to Buffalo. Worked done, played for a long time for this team, left as a free agent and went to Atlanta. and missed out on the Super Bowl ring, but neither of those guys played nearly as long as DeMar Dotson did. So that's a shame. That's the thing that I'm going to hate the most for DeMar is missing out on that opportunity to go to the playoffs. Hopefully wherever he ends up on a playoff team and gets that chance to go. But anyway. Yeah.
Man, he had an unbelievable – I'm just – you do not see that happen at offensive line very often. I mean, where a guy like that goes and is undrafted and just kind of makes himself into something really good. I mean –
yeah,
like you're right. Maybe he wasn't a special tier tackle, but he was a really good tackle for a lot of years. Really consistent. I mean, tons of value in him. And
he did have some really good years. Yeah.
And here's the one thing I didn't know about DeMar Dotson. I knew most of the story, but I didn't realize that his 1 year playing college football, he was a defensive tackle. So he comes into training camp for the Bucs as an undrafted free agent, playing a completely new position that he didn't play in college. I mean, the odds of just making the team as an undrafted free agent is one thing, but to make it playing a position that you didn't even play on the other side of the ball,
Start for 11 years.
And then start for that long. It's very commendable. It's a crazy story. And the Bucs, for whatever reason, are a gold mine when it comes to finding undrafted free agents and having them turn into solid players for the team.
Like Donald Penn, there's another example. I mean, those were the two bookend tackles for a while. Both those guys were undrafted free agents. So, anyway, DeMar, good luck in the future. He joked with me last year that we're going to write a Hollywood screenplay, but we don't know that we're going to get any Hollywood directors to even believe the story, even though it's true. He says, man, my story is a lot better than the Blind Side story. And I said, yeah, I agree. I agree. It's pretty incredible, but – we've got some good news with one of our sponsors, guys. Want to hear about it?
Yes. I'd love to.
I cannot wait.
Pin Chasers Bowling Alley back open again.
Let's go.
Yep. And I know you guys have missed it. That means we may have a bowling league coming up in the near future.
Oh.
Yep. The Pewter Report bowling leagues that we do. We normally do two a year. I don't know that we'll be able to do that this year, but we're going to definitely try and do one in the fall. Pin Chasers has multiple locations in the Tampa Bay area. They've got one over on Hillsborough Avenue near the Veterans. They have the one on Armenia, the one that we go to. It's right down the street from one Buccaneer Place. A lot of Buccaneer players go there. And also they have a location up in Zephyr Hills if you're in Pasco County. But the Peroni family has owned Pin Chasers for years. Huge Buck fans. Anthony's dad started it and has been a big Buccaneer fan for a long time. He recently passed away, but Anthony has been running the show for quite a while now, has taken over and followed in his father's footsteps. And Anthony is a huge Buccaneer fan. Go out and support these businesses that have been shut down for the last couple months. I mean, they're hurting. They need to, Anthony and his management staff did a great thing. They didn't furlough anybody, during that time. So, that's money out of his pocket that he paid to keep his employees, paid essentially. So definitely go support the people that support pewterreport.com. Very important to do that. Pinchasers.net. You can find them online. You can get lessons. You can join leagues. You can just go for an afternoon or an evening of bowling. But go to pinchasers.net. You can see all of their daily specials. When you go in, make sure you let them know that you appreciate them sponsoring the Pewter Nation podcast. And one more thing, when we get into as we're talking about, you know, donations and things like that and helping out during a crisis time, of course, pewterreport.com is, asking for your support during this time to help fund us. We've been really crippled by the COVID-19 situation. We've lost some advertisers, some that we've had haven't been able to pay. And so it's put us in a bind to a degree. So if you like what we do, if you like our stories, if you like the staff that we have, I don't want to fire John. I really don't. Okay. And I'd hate to have to fire Scott, but if I have to, I will, unless we get Scott. That's not true. I'm not threatening and I don't have any authority to fire anybody, but listen, let's help keep the gang together and your donations can do that. Not only does your donations help, keep food on everybody's table, it also helps keep the website up and running. There are a lot of costs involved in running a website, travel expenses, things like that, road games, trips to London, things like that. Your donation can help. And we've had a great, great turnout so far. We've had a lot of our friends from even across the ocean. We've had some from Germany, from England, from Scotland who have donated. If you want to, you can become a monthly member. $3, $6, and $9 per month where it just comes out. You know, won't even notice that. I mean, $3 a month. I mean, I just, you know, skip one Dunkin' Donuts run or whatever it is that you might be doing. And you won't even notice that, but that goes a long way in helping us out. If you want to become a Hall of Fame member, it's $9. Again, very, very, very inexpensive to be able to help us out, but it all adds up, and we'd appreciate all of your support. Go to pewterreport.com. You'll see the donate now ads that run. Click on that. That'll redirect you to a place where you can enter in your information. Maybe you just want to do a one-time donation, whatever it is that you can do. It helps. It's not a requirement. We'll never be a site where we charge people. But if you can help us, think of it as like an internet tip jar, and you can pay my copay to go to the doctor to find out why I'm coughing right now in the middle of this. But anyway, pewterreport.com. Go check it out. We appreciate all of your support. And genuinely, it really does mean a lot. We've been just overwhelmed by the amount of people that have reached out to us, and we appreciate that. That makes us feel good. And when it's Sunday night at 1 a.m. and I'm working on the mailbag, and then I set my alarm to get up at 6 so I can try and get it done by 9. I mean, when you don't want to do those things, you remember that, you know, people are counting on you. I mean, when John puts his stories out, when Scott does his Fab Five, you know, when I, you know, yell at Matt, hurry up, get this story up, here's breaking news. I mean, you know, he's got to stop eating dinner or drinking beer or whatever he's doing. You know, these things, you know, when we know that people care, you know, it motivates us to do the best work we possibly can. And we certainly appreciate everybody who has supported us so far. And if you can continue to do that, we would appreciate it. What else did we want to talk about? John, you had a great piece this week where you took a look at the Bucs interior offensive line and you came away with some observations. Now, what I love about John joining the staff is he doesn't have any preconceived notions about this football team, right? He's not looking at it from an outsider perspective, but to a degree he is. I mean, he's learning who Alex Kappa is, who Ryan Jensen is, who Ali Marpet is. And so it's not that Scott and I are biased or Matt and Taylor are biased, but we've seen these guys, right? So we kind of know, but you're seeing some of this stuff for the very first time. And what are the things that you're seeing or that you saw when you did your story on Wednesday about the interior offensive line?
Yeah, man, it was really fun to do. And every Wednesday, the Bucs briefing will look a little different now that the draft's over. I'll be looking at three current Buccaneers players and watching a bunch of their tape, clipping some of that tape, showing them in the articles and kind of breaking down, okay, here's these guys, here's their skill sets, here's what they're doing well right now, here's ways they need to improve or where's that they could be a liability for the team or strength for the team going into the season. So we'll look at probably everybody by the time the season starts, really, everybody that factors in as playing time to return to the Bucs and that isn't a rookie. So we'll take an in-depth look at everybody. But, yeah, in this week's Bucs briefing, if people haven't read it, was Ali Marpet. It was Alex Kappa, and it was Ryan Jensen that I took a look at that interior offensive line, who will likely be the three. I mean, Kappa may have some competition with Joe Haig, but more than likely he'll be the starter at right guard, Jensen at center, and Marpet at left guard. And really, and a great assist from Brandon Thorne, who's one of my closest friends in the field, writes for The Athletic and established the run as well, and just an offensive line guru and a guy that's been a great friend over the years and helped me learn so much about the position. But, I mean, what's really stands out to me and to Brandon as well was Marpet is now establishing consistent dominance at the position. You know, Brandon mentioned him as a top 3 to 4 left guard, yeah, in the NFL right now. I watched several games of him toward the end of the season, really focusing more toward the end of the season, get a better feel for what direction guys were going in. And, man, he was just so good. There was hardly anything to complain about. And I'd known Marpet was good. I scouted him coming out. I have some idea. But when you sit down and just focus on him as a player, you're really able to appreciate the consistency, the technique, everything that he brings to the table. And Ryan Jensen then was just so much better in his second season as a Buck. And something Brandon said really, you know, kind of reinforced to me why that may have been the case. He talked about how Harold Goodwin and Bruce Arians' concepts in the run game with a lot of gap and vertical type blocking schemes compared to Dirk Koetter, who would run a little bit more zone. And Goodwin runs a little bit of everything, but having some of those more vertical-based schemes were so effective for Jensen because he's such a good down blocker, double-team guy. You know, he can do all that kind of stuff. Not as good when you ask him to reach block. I still saw some good reach blocks on tape when they did do some zone stuff. So maybe his whole game just took off. But for Jensen, it's been, I mean, we talked about Dotson's story, and Jensen's honestly kind of like that. I mean, D2, played left tackle at a D2 school at 240 pounds, you know, something like that. And he was kind of like adding weight, trying to get to, and he got to like 270, I think. And then he was like a late pick in the 200s and range. And, you know, he kind of was like, okay, let's see what he can develop into, and didn't start for a couple years like Dotson, and then became a starter and eventually became a good player in Baltimore, and then hit free agency and wasn't that great last season with the Bucs. Was okay, but if you pay a guy and you're paying him $10 million a year at center, you want him to be a really good player, and he became one of the best centers in the league. Brandon said there's a chance he might have been the best center in the league. He was in the conversation for that last year. And I watched, and it was hard to – sometimes it gets pushed back in pass protection, but it's you're quibbling when you're looking for weaknesses with him in terms of what they asked him to do last season. I thought he was really good. And then Kappa is growing. You know, I think he was pretty average last year. There's some ugly reps. There's some really positive reps against really good players where he's left on an island in a scheme that asks a lot of their offensive linemen in pass protection, and he did a really nice job. And I think there is – the steps he took even in 1 year is just warrants – being hopeful about the upside, because he's coming from such a small school. You know, there is obviously going to be a growth, but right now he just has to get stronger. And I worry about that with what's going on right now. Is he able to get stronger with the programs and the abilities, the opportunities he has to lift right now? Is that continuing to happen for him? Because when you watch and compare, you know, both his guards, he and Marpet, obviously, Marpet's going to be a lot better in a lot of ways, but the biggest difference is just grip strength. Marpet is unbelievable, elite. Brandon called it, you know, elite tier. Like, that's how, like, a tier one grip strength in the NFL. Like, you just can't get off of his grip when he locks you up. And Kappa just doesn't have that right now. A lot of second chance opportunities to rushers because they can kind of throw him out of his way and move him a little too easily. So I thought it was a big step in the right direction. He needs to continue to get better. My question back to you guys is, reading the comments on that story, it was crazy to me how many people were like, well, these guys can't be good because the Bucs didn't run the ball well last year. So, you know, you're blowing smoke. And I'm like, man, first of all, anybody who knows me knows I'm a pretty harsh critic when it comes to it. You know, if I saw it on tape and thought any of those guys sucked, I'd tell you they did. But, I mean, I think that one of the biggest misconceptions out there, too, is that it's all on the offensive line in the run game. I think there are so many other factors. Kind of tweeted a little bit about that this week. And just kind of curious to your thoughts. You guys watched the Bucs all season. And Taylor, I know before we got on, you were kind of anxious to maybe address this, so maybe you kick things off. But what if you were going to tell fans, like, the biggest issues in the run game, and not that there's just one issue, because there almost never is when a run game struggles, and I'll get to why that may be an important factor in this in a second, but what would you say were the biggest struggles for the Bucs in the run game? Was it backs? Was it tight ends? Was it the scheme? Was it the timing of runs? Was it the fact they couldn't establish the run? Was it offensive line or specific offensive linemen? What were your thoughts on that?
I think one of the problems was the backs. I think Peyton Barber was about as much of just a guy for, and he started way longer than he should have. We saw Rojo was able to take the reins. He really did have a much better season. Not that that's really saying anything when you look at his rookie season, but he had some really, really bright, shining moments. I think that getting him back there, getting Keyshawn Vaughn back there, maybe whoever TJ Logan or Raymond Kalai, whichever one of them wins out, get a couple weapons back there. But I think that predictability was one of the worst things for Tampa Bay's running game. Now, like you said, Ali Marpet is who he is. He's a phenomenal left guard. Ryan Jensen played arguably his best season at center last year. And Alex Kappa, like you said, average, but when you look at the year before, way to get on the field with Caleb Benenock ahead of him, I think that in itself speaks volumes about the kind of growth that he's put forward with this Bucs running game. Now, when you look at Pro Football Outsiders, the Bucs ran behind their center or their two guards on 70% of their run plays last year. The only teams that were even close were, I think, the New York Jets at 68%. You saw how that worked out for them. Le'Veon Bell was the last yards per carry of any running back that had significant carries. So that was a huge issue. When Bruce Arians stepped in the building and started watching tape, the first thing he said is, we're going to do things that amplify our players' strengths, and we're not going to make them do things that we're weak at. And one of the people that he called out immediately was, he said, DeMar Dotson can't run block, so we're not going to run it behind him. And I don't think, quite frankly, they thought that Donovan Smith could block the run very well either, hence why 70% of their runs came that center unit of Marpet, of Jensen, and Kappa. Now, I think that adding Tristan Wirfs is going to make a difference. He's going to add – he's not a finished run blocker, but I think he can do it better than DeMar Dotson. I think his athleticism allows them to do a little more variability in their run game. And I also think that just another year under Harold Goodwin, who has significantly, in talking to the offensive linemen last year, shrank the playbook that the Bucs used to have under George Warhop, has simplified things a lot. I think that they may not be a top five unit running this year, but they're going to make significant strides and just be better with one more year under this.
I agree with a lot that you have to say, Taylor. I mean, they couldn't run to the side where DeMar Dotson was, so that kind of limits your playbook right there. I will say, though, I do feel at times, it's particularly in the second half of games, the Bucs found some success running the ball, and they would go to it for like two drives in a row, and then they would kind of just stop, and the drive would stall. So I think it was more of a lack of commitment to the running game. And also, a lot of times when they're down, that's going to skew the stats where they're going to be passing it more, so it's not going to help their run game that much. I do recall, and I don't know if Mark or Taylor, you'll remember this. A lot of the home games, there was times that Peyton Barber would be in the game. And, you know, we have a little different vantage point in the press box versus just watching at home on our TV. And there's a couple times I remember people in the media going, why is he running that way? You know, the hole's right there. Why didn't he run this way? And I think that obviously when the running game is lacking, it's not just like one specific thing. But those are the couple of examples that I would kind of point to for why the run game struggled. Because the offensive line, it's not the best, but it's okay. You know, they can win with this offensive line.
They don't have an identity. I mean, that to me is the biggest thing. And I agree, well, on the commitment part. I mean, this is the pass-first offense, and running the football is secondary. There were times last year when their run game was being successful and they got away from it because, you know, Bruce Arians likes to throw the football. And let's face it, when you have two guys that average over 15 yards a reception, if your running back's getting 4 yards a carry, it takes, you know, four times for you to get that 16 yards instead of one pass. I mean, Bruce Arians isn't a patient guy. He likes to score points, move the ball up and down the field. This team is not a run first team, and they just never really committed to it completely. But I don't know what their identity is either. When I watch them run the football, are they a man scheme blocking team? Are they a zone blocking scheme? I don't know that they know what they are. They've got a mismatch, or I don't know if I'm using the right word there. They've got guys that are athletic, like Kappa, I think, would be more of an athletic guy for a zone blocking scheme as opposed to a Donovan Smith, who doesn't have the quickest feet in the world, who's not going to be able to get to that second level sometimes. You know, they don't, again, you go back to the Washington Redskins back in the 80s when they had the Hogs and the Denver Broncos, when they ran a zone blocking scheme. I mean, they were lighter athletic guys. You know, some offensive lines are the big burly guys, right? They're just a big, large mass, take up space and flatten you kind of guys. I don't know that this team knew what they wanted to do running the football last year. Now, a good running back, and I don't even mean a great running back, a good running back can help you figure out what that identity is, and a good running back can help hide some deficiencies in your run game. And this team just didn't have a good running back last year. They had a couple okay backs. Ronald Jones showed some flashes compared to the year before. Obviously, it was head and shoulders above his rookie season. That was one of the reasons that I was clamoring for running back in the second round this year, is because I think they need a guy that – listen, the Buccaneers didn't have a great offensive line when Warwick Dunn was here and Mike Alstott were here. They just made that offensive line better by their talent, their ability. And there wasn't a guy on this football team that got the ball handed to that could make that offensive line look better, because the running backs weren't great. You know, I don't know if Keyshawn Vaughn can be that guy. Maybe a second year with Joe Gilbert and Harold Goodwin, you know, maybe again they get on the same page. Maybe they figure out what the identity is that they want to be. But I think all of the things that we've said, John, really, you know, kind of sum it up. And I don't know that there's any answers there, because it's not just one thing. It's a combination of a lot of things. But individually talented. Donovan Smith does some things well. Ryan Jensen does some things well. Ali Marpet, the most consistent guy. One more thing before I start rambling on longer than Taylor. Here's another thing. They don't have a leader on this offensive line. I mean, Ryan Jensen probably is the leader just because he's the kind of the badass enforcer kind of guy on this team. Donovan is not that guy. Ali Marpet is a quiet guy. Alex Kappa doesn't say two words. And DeMar Dotson was just too nice of a guy. I want some of Ryan Adams. I'm Ryan Adams, not Ryan Adams. He's a creepy musician. I want Ryan Jensen. Yeah, I want Ryan Jensen's badass attitude to rub off on some of these guys. And I hope – I don't know – you probably know more about this than I do, John. Is Tristan Wirfs a nasty guy? Can he get nasty? That's what I like in an offensive lineman, but that's because I'm a fat guy and I coached offensive line in high school. And, you know, we wanted to be, you know, the nasty guys on the football team. And just was not a lot of that other than Ryan Jensen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think watching in tapes and seeing it in games, I mean, I don't know what his demeanor is because I don't know him personally like you guys do. But, I mean, Marpet and Kappa – I mean, Kappa was known for that style of play in college and obviously lower level. But I remember the Senior Bowl, first day of practice, I thought he was going to kill Marcus Davenport. I mean, he was just beating the crap out of him. And I was like, this kid is so much fun because every rep he was pushing him out to play, he was just irritated, you know, and there was – a guy coming up from a D2 school that had something to clearly had something to prove. And I mean, you even saw that I put in my piece and there were times, I mean, Alex Kappa pancaked DJ Reader last year. I mean, it was a double team at first, so he got to move him. But I mean, he planted that inside hand and he pancaked DJ Reader and he pancaked Elias Campbell in pass protection. I mean, so he gets after guys. I think, you know, Marpet is one of those quiet assassins. I don't know that he's going to pancake a ton of people, you know, on a regular basis, but talk about a guy who finishes and competes and stays on. So I think they're mean on the interior, mean enough, just fine on the interior, but a tackle. Yeah. I mean, that's not the Ben Donovan Smith game. You know, if you're looking to point fingers at the offensive line for some of the run struggles, which they deserve some of that blame, some of it. I mean, Donovan Smith is a good place to start in the run game. I thought he was, you know, from what I've seen so far, and I'll wait till I study him closer for a Bucks briefing to comment completely. I thought in the pass protection, he made a lot of improvements, but in the run game, yeah, he's not somebody who's going to help your team on a consistent basis. There are times when he blocks and you're like, oh my gosh, like, but consistently, yeah, wasn't there with him. Kappa is still going to get beat up on a lot of run plays just because the play strength isn't there. So he was still a concern at times. You know, Dotson, you guys have already talked about. So there's three of five starters right there that I think you could definitely argue were average at best in the run game for most of last season, without mentioning Marpet and Jensen, who I think were really good in the run game. And so I'll throw that out there first. Second, I'll throw out there, and I thought you guys brought up great points and all things that I really agree with, from establishing the run, not being a critical or pivotal part of the offense, offensive approach, which, by the way, I think is completely fine. I think the run game should be utilized and every method should be maximized on a team. But, you know, if you end up great in the passing game, that's just way more important to me. And so, I don't think that's the end of the world, but I do think it's a reason why the run game wasn't that great. The backs were a problem. I mean, I have a play. I was talking with Brandon today, actually, and I sent him a Peyton Barber play where Ryan Jensen hits this unbelievable reach block, and it's perfectly blocked on the right side, and Peyton Barber just cuts it right back into the nose tackle's lap. I mean, there's no reason at all why that should happen. And so when Ronald Jones got the ball and it was late in the season, they were much better run game, and that was a huge difference. So hopefully that continues to grow and that continues to make things better. The other thing I'll mention, and I just saw this in Pittsburgh for a full season, and most people know I'm a Pittsburgh guy and a Steelers fan, and I saw the tight ends destroy the run game. Vance McDonald wasn't healthy and got beat up last season. He's normally a good run blocker. Nick Vinette was just a total waste of a fifth-round pick and got beat up last year. They had nothing, and they loved to gap people out. So they'd bring in tight ends. They'd try to run heavy. The tight ends would get destroyed. The offensive line was fine. Tight ends would get destroyed, and somebody would make the tackle for a short gain, either chasing the play down or right in that gap. And that was a big problem for the Bucs. I mean, Cam Brate and O.J. Howard were straight up below average as blockers this past season. I know Anthony Auclair did some good things that you guys saw in the run game too. Pro Football Focus doesn't like any of their run grade so far, run blocking so far, but I have seen most of Howard and Brady at this point, and they just were, I mean, they're complete liabilities. It can't happen again this season. I think everybody knows what this is what Braid is. Howard has been better than this before, and he's got to get back to being better than this, or they're going to have to lean on Gronkowski heavily and hopefully Auclair heavily in that way. But that was a big problem in the run game. They did not have good blocking from the tight ends. They didn't have backs making good decisions, and half the offensive line was probably average to below average. I also say that I think that they ran too often in obvious run situations when the box was stacked, when teams were expecting them to run, they ran. It is already hard enough to run the ball successfully in the NFL. The reality of running the ball in the NFL is just knowing that you have to have so many things go right. You know, it's not like a passing game where one guy gets open and you can throw the ball to him and that could be a completion. In the run game, a lot of variables have to click. Other guys can make plays from gaps over if they're not blocked from the backside, if they're not blocked. Too many athletes in today's NFL. Safeties can play the run. It just, there's too many factors. And so because of that, it so helps a team when you can get guys out of the box to run the football. When the Bucs did that, I saw them being successful. When they didn't and they had too many guys to block, too many things went wrong, and there wasn't space for these backs to be able to see and to be able to run to. So I think there's a huge combination of factors. I think fans would be wise to consider all of it, but I don't think it means that the interior offensive line, especially Ryan Jensen and Ali Marpet, aren't good because they weren't a successful run team last year. I think they were still pretty good players, and I think if fans watched them closely, they would appreciate them a little bit more.
And I'm with you, John. I'm okay with this team not being a run first or a great running football team. Who's one of the best running backs in the NFL with one of the best offensive lines in the NFL? Which team? They have a star on their helmet. Yeah. How many Super Bowls have they won?
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't 1974, right? It's not Franco Harris and
they haven't won a playoff game in what?
Forever. I think running the ball effectively makes your passing game better. I think your passing game can also make your running game better. But, you know, the Buccaneers don't have to have a 1,400-yard rusher. They just don't. But, you know, they can't be at 2nd and 11, you know what I mean, or 3rd and 9 because they can't run the football. Mm-hmm. One thing that frustrated me with Bruce Arians is and Dirk did this to a degree too, and part of that is because they didn't have the bell cow running back. They didn't have anybody that was clearly the standout better guy. So they kind of gave Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones opportunities to establish that. Then they kind of stayed with the hot hand. But I'm a big guy, a big believer that, you know, running backs need carries to get into rhythm, figure out what defenses are doing and those kind of things. And I'll tell you another thing, it's a big difference for an offensive lineman who you're blocking for, right? I mean, if you know, Peyton Barber style or Ronald Jones style or Keyshawn Vaughn style and you know, they're consistently the guy back there, people might say that's an excuse, but I'm telling you, it's not. I truly believe – finding that guy and he be the guy. And I understand you got to give him a breather from time to time. But this two series for this guy, and then the next two series is going to be this guy. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the most effective way. But again, I'm sitting here in my underwear doing a podcast. I'm not coaching football.
You're in your underwear?
Actually, I'm not. I'm wearing shorts and I'm wearing underwear. I'm wearing both at the same time. Rarely is that the case.
This is a big day on the pod.
It is. Hey, we're going to wrap things up right now, but real quick, our good friends at Ford's Garage and Yeoman's Cask and Lion, guess what? They're back open, guys. We went last Friday night, sat down at Yeoman's downtown Tampa, and I had the shrimp with the mashed potatoes and the Guinness gravy and the coleslaw, and it was amazing. I'm telling you, big, huge Gulf shrimp fried, delicious. That's my go-to meal at Yeoman's. We're planning on going to Ford's this weekend as well. Go back out. Again, they were hurting for a long time. Now, they were doing takeout, but that's, you know, just a fraction of the business they were doing before the COVID situation hit. FordsGarageUSA.com. You can find a location near you. Also, check out their menus that they offer to you and get their hours and things like that. And one thing I want to tell you guys, and I've seen a lot of people mention this on social media, when you go back to these restaurants that are starting to open back up, be kind. I mean, they're trying to get back in the groove. Some of these guys are new employees because they lost employees when they had to shut down. They're trying to determine what type of staffing they need. They don't know how many people are going to be there. They're not making the rules on social distancing or how the seating is. Take care of your servers. You know, don't be a jerk, you know, because the food wasn't perfect. If it's not right, it's not right. That's one thing. But, you know, try and be kind and be patient right now. Everybody's going through a stressful situation right now. Don't go to a restaurant and make things worse by being a pain in the ass. Anyway, Ford's Garage, Yeoman's, great sponsors of the Pewter Nation podcast and Pewter Report. They have been for a long time. And we need you to go out and support those guys because we want to keep them around for a long time. But the most important thing is they just put out a good quality product. And I think everyone here would agree, except for John, who's never been to one. But we're going to take care of that when you get down here. We've got a stack of gift cards for John. That's how we're going to pay him, by the way. And gift cards only.
I'll take it.
hey, food's food. You got to eat, right?
So, hey, trust me, that is the thing that my wife and I are probably most excited to do when we get down there is start trying the food.
And there's some great restaurants, and a lot of them are, have been sponsors at PewterReport.com, and Ford's and Yeoman's are just two examples of that. We appreciate everybody listening. Scott, have safe travels. He's probably going to listen to this on his drive on his little mini vacation this weekend. You guys be safe. Everyone out there that are listening, be safe. Let's not let our guard down, all right? Let's not get political on this podcast, but let's not let our guard down. You know, don't be licking the handrails at the grocery store and you know, doing silly.
Yeah, Taylor.
You know, the ones at the grocery store have all the flavor.
Yeah, no. Listen.
All the other ones are bland.
Taylor, you still have to wash your hands for 30 seconds, dude. It's not go back to like washing.
I haven't washed my hands since 98. A pandemic ain't going to change that, Mark. Come on.
All right. Let's all be safe. All our listeners out there and our Pewter Report readers, we appreciate everything you guys do for us. And we hope we can continue to do a great job for you. For Matt Matera, for Taylor Jenkins, for John Ledyard, for the absent Scott Reynolds, I'm Mark Cook, and we'll see you next week with another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out. Out. Out.